I am broadcasting live from KUVO and KVJZ in Denver. Coming back, I'll be back in New York by Monday. I want to talk about an issue over the changing fortunes and concerns of the NAACP. And the NAACP's president, Benjamin Jealous, did something that's really completely unheard of for his organization. He encouraged members of New York's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community center to work with him, and specifically to attend the NAACP March for Jobs and Justice in Washington next month. To help us put this in perspective, we've got our friend Patrick Henry Bass, who is an Essence magazine senior editor and, of course, friend of the show. Well, Patrick, explain. Clearly, there is issues of sometimes homophobia among the African-American community. Explain what the history of the NAACP and their relationship with the gay and lesbian communities.
Well, this is a bold step in the right direction for Benjamin Jealous and also the executive director, chairman of the board of the NAACP, Rosalind Brock. Both of them are just 37 and 44 years old. So they grew up in a time in which they never experienced legal segregation. In terms of equal rights, the NAACP, it's interesting that they're participating in a march on Washington, because the greatest march on Washington, of course, where Dr. King delivered his I Have a Dream speech, there was contention about the role of Bayard Rustin, who was openly gay and a communist and a dandy and had been brought up on morals charges. Roy Wilkins, who was a genius in terms of moving the NAACP forward in legislation, had tremendous challenges with Bayard Rustin's open sexuality. And in fact, he removed Bayard Rustin from having a high-profile role at the march. In addition to Bayard Rustin organizing the March on Washington along with Asa Philip Randolph, James Baldwin played a tremendous behind-the-scenes role in terms of writing, in terms of talking to the Kennedys, in terms of affecting a change through his writing for The New Yorker. So there had always been a presence of African-American gay men within the civil rights movement. They had just been hidden. So for are certainly not visible. So for Benjamin Jealous to take this stand, it moves the organization back to its activist beginnings, its activist roots.
Yeah, but let's talk about the backdrop against which this is all happening. I mean, we have Bishop Eddie Long in Livonia, Atlanta, clearly making headlines because he's being very outspoken against gays at his Baptist church there. We had the numbers coming out of California in which it was a huge number of African Americans voted against the right to gay marriage there. So there's obviously a dialogue among the African American community out of which this NAACP statement is coming.
Right, but Celeste, one of the challenges is the dialogue is not going to take place in the church. And so in terms of institutions, there have been two major forces within the African American community where African Americans have always found security and comfort. Those organizations have been the NAACP and the African American Church. Just because religion is so personal, I just don't think that you're going to have that conversation coming from a pulpit. So the NAACP is a logical choice to begin to have those conversations because the NAACP hasn't been activist in a long time. I'm still waiting for the NAACP's message on women's rights.
Well, let me actually read what the NAACP president, Benjamin Jealous, wrote in the Washington Post. He said, "The NAACP is opposed to discrimination in all its forms. We recognize that many of our members are also members of the LGBT community, and just as the LGBT community counts on us to stand with it for basic civil rights protections, so we count on the LGBT community to stand with us in our unified struggle for the broader civil rights agenda." That's very positive, but it doesn't give us specifics on exactly what the NAACP is going to do and how they're going to work with the lesbian and gay community.
Well, Celeste, I've not heard the NAACP give specifics on many of their programs. I think that's what people are looking forward to at the march in the first week of October. The challenge for the NAACP is to make itself relevant. And when you're speaking about equality, the NAACP is going to be seen as hypocritical if it doesn't address the issue of equal rights in some way, because the NAACP is a multiracial, multi-religious organization. When it was founded in 1909, it was multiracial. It was multi-religious.
Well, let's talk about this issue of personal. You say you don't expect necessarily this to be addressed from the pulpit because it's too personal. But I'm wondering if that's maybe needs to be amplified. I mean, it's a sense of denial, I think. This dialogue has not gone on within the African-American community. And how does that have an impact on you personally,
it's not a dialogue, John. It's a monologue, because at the African-American church has been an institution in which you have leaders from the pulpit speaking. So it's not as if in the African-American community that you have a church. First of all, we are the most churched people in the country. We attend church more than any other American group, and we identify ourselves as Christian more than any other group. So the way that the African-American church is structured has always been led. We've always had a leader. In terms of Bishop Eddie Long, I find this a fascinating conversation, because we don't know if the allegations of the three men who've charged him with sexual misconduct, the molestation,
coercion,
they were all underage, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But in terms of major issues about sexuality, the African-American church has been in denial for a long time, because that space, people demand and insist that the African-American church deal with those particular political issues, but it's a slippery slope, because you're talking about sex and religion. Teenage pregnancy is extremely high within the African-American community. African-American women are leading in ages 18 to 34 in AIDS cases. African-Americans do not want the church to be that space where they're talking about pro-choice issues. So the NAACP has always been the safer place, the more comfortable space to deal with hard-pressing political and social issues. The NAACP has, its larynx has been removed since 1963. There were other organizations.
Right, but then that's really the issue, Patrick, because many African-Americans don't see the NAACP as relevant anymore. They see it as a graying institution. Are they the best forum to be having this discussion?
Well, I'm saying, I hope so, Celeste, because the church is not a political, while the church is political, the church is not the space that African-Americans are going to for a political conversation. And the church is that institution that most African-Americans feel most comfortable in. In terms of the African-American church, there are, of course, African-American Lutherans, there are African-American Unitarians, but African-Americans, by and large, identify as Baptists. And we know the message that comes from the Baptist Conference in terms of equality and same-sex marriage.
Well, we actually reached out to the NAACP a number of times to get them to participate in this conversation. We hadn't heard back from
But I think that it's important to note that Ben Jealous has taken an extremely courageous step in having this conversation, because this is not a conversation that the NAACP has ever had before. And if it wants to move forward and it wants to hold true to its mission of equality for all, then that's a conversation that must take place. And it must be a dialogue. It can't be a monologue.
Patrick Kearney-Bass, senior editor for Essence Magazine, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you can share your personal stories about the monologue or dialogue as you see it in the African-American community about this issue or anything else on the show. Just click on blogs at thetakeaway.org and see what's catching our eye and what we're working on in the program. With an update to the film Wall Street heading to theaters today, fill in the blank. Greed is blank.
John Dartmouth, greed breeds emptiness.
Give us a call. Fill in the blank, too. Reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Huckaberry here in New York.
Greed is bad. Ambition is good. Celeste Headlee here at KUVO KVJZ in Denver. This is The Takeaway.